Hey everybody, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. As always, feel free to reach out, Jeff, at beekeepingfornewbies.com. It's newbees.com. Well, welcome back, folks. I hope you are enjoying this glorious swarm season of ours. And for those of you who are burying out from snow and ice and all kinds of craziness, welcome to the party for the rest of us here. Or I should say with the rest of us. We got episode 144 going on today. We're talking about when and how to requeen a hive and what you would need to know. There's a lot of circumstances and scenarios that could occur, and you're going to need to know how to manage that and take the appropriate action depending on what's best for you. So today, I got to give a thanks to Martha and the Vandellas. The warm-up song of the day was Nowhere to Run from 1965, so thank you to them. Also, don't forget, jump in the Discord room. We got the link on the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage there. We got a lot of folks joining pretty regularly, a lot of chitter-chatter going on about all things bee-related, swarming and swarm traps and all that stuff is the biggest topic right now. But on the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage, we've got swarm trap plans, nuke box plans. There's a couple good articles there about American fowl brood, a couple other things you can check out. We've also put together a lot of how-tos. I'm trying to get like one or two out every day. It just depends on how busy I am that day. Like, I'm not going to get one out today because I woke up with a failed HVAC system. Okay, ADD, a little sidetrack here. So yeah, I woke up this morning, one of my HVAC systems was down. I did some diagnostics. I've got a bad transformer. As soon as I'm done recording and getting this out to you all, I will have to go to Ferguson's and pick up a new transformer because today I'm an HVAC tech. Anyway, on the bestbeekeepinggear.com site, I'm trying to put out one or two articles a day, just different how-tos and tips and tricks and things. So check that out as well. But let's jump into requeening the queen. Whether your queen is, she could be failing. There could be some issues going on with her. She might be missing. Now missing, I'm going to go ahead and let myself go off on this tangent here. I've mentioned this before, and I want to mention it again because it's critically important. Remember that the queen might lay eggs all the time, but the nurse bees have to make the decision as to whether or not they're going to raise those eggs and developing larvae into brood. If there aren't food and resources coming in, they will cannibalize the eggs. You can open up the hive, look inside, and be like, oh my God, there's no eggs. I'm queenless. This happens to a lot of people. It happens every season. It happened to me for the first few seasons till I figured it all out. Just because you don't see eggs doesn't mean you're queenless. It could just be a period of time in a dearth, or for whatever reason they've determined that they're not going to raise brood right now. Again, I would be a little concerned right now in the spring when there's a big ramp up in the northern hemisphere and a lot of activity, and you're not seeing eggs and larvae, I would be concerned. But I just wanted to make sure you know that just because you don't see eggs does not mean that you are queenless. But if she truly is missing or you don't know what happened to her, she's not performing well, we're going to go through a bunch of different things to talk about, you know, the process and methodologies and approaches to requeening the hive when the time is right. So we know that the queen is kind of the central engine, the backbone of the colony. If you don't have good, strong genetics, queen pheromone is strong, you don't have that sort of pheromonal leadership present, the rest of the colony is going to suffer. You're going to have issues. You know, poor queen basically means poor brood patterns, poor population growth, low honey yields, defensive behavior. Lots of different things can happen when something is off with your queen. That's why you hear a lot of us, particularly if you're new to the Discord room, you've been chatting there, and you hear people say a lot like, oh, I got this colony that was pretty defensive, and every time I walk nearby, they're bouncing off my head. One of the more common approaches is to just introduce a queen from good stock that you know is a good, gentle stock and start from scratch with that queen. So now all of the existing workers will continue to raise the new brood, hopefully with better genetics. So the idea with it is really to take a colony that is and has been productive and to keep it continuing to be productive by requeening when appropriate. It's going to give you better control over the colony well-being, the genetics, the timing of things, and just the overall productivity. Before we go into some of the methods, approaches, and maybe some of the reasons why you would be requeening, I wanted to talk briefly about mating. I want you guys to understand how this works with the queen. A lot of people have said, like, oh no, I have these queen cells, and I don't have any drones, and I'm really concerned about you know, being able to mate. I want my queen to be able to mate. So your queen leaves the hive when it's time for her to mate. When a new virgin queen emerges, let's say you've done a walkaway split, you've got your queen in one colony and you've got queen cells in the other. Virgin queens that that emerge, they're not mating with the drones in your hive. You'd be lucky if they're even mating with the drones in your apiary. Typically, this is kind of a really long story. It's almost a separate episode in itself, but I'll try to keep it brief. When that queen leaves, she's going to go out and she's going to look for what's called a drone congregating area. And when she goes through this, literally, she will fly through an area where the drones are like in a little bit of a swarm of their own, basically. And as she's flying through, she's getting mated in flight. It's pretty wild. It's a pretty impressive thing, but she'll mate with between as few as, you know, 8 or 10 drones, but as many as 15, 20. I've even heard over 30 sometimes. As she goes through there and, you know, through that drone congregating area, she gets mated, comes back, and usually she's done. Occasionally there will be a second and rarely a third flight, but typically one flight is enough for her to get fully mated. Now, what's interesting is it only takes about one or two drones to get her to reach capacity. And even though she would only need one to two drones to actually fill that capacity that she has, she's able to mix everything from all the drones who contributed to give her that maximum amount of genetic diversity. Because she basically stores the sperm in an internal organ called the spermatheca, and it's stored there for the rest of her life, and that's what she uses to fertilize her eggs. So if she has a fertilized egg, that would become a worker, and an unfertilized egg that she would lay would become a drone. So it's a pretty cool system that she has, and being able to control which ones, you know, are laid as workers and drones, I think it's a pretty fascinating thing. But I want you to understand this process. And another kind of a neat and cool thing about it is drones will leave the hive, right? And they'll go out and they'll go to these DCAs and they'll hang out and they get kind of worn out. They're like, all right, let me go find something to eat. They go back to the hive. They're like, hey, can I get a bite to eat? You guys got anything laying around I can have? Little scraps of something? I appreciate that. And then they go back out. So they've got to constantly kind of be going back and forth throughout the day. And it's funny because most drones really never actually get to accomplish their life purpose, because as soon as they mate, they die. Most of them never actually encounter a queen during their short life. So the drones will tend to stay a little closer to home, whereas the queen may fly much further away. And where this is great is it allows her to get sometimes outside, quite often, outside of the radius of drones that are from her own apiary, and then get into areas where she can get more genetic diversity by going out a little bit further. Not that she wouldn't meet up with drones on the way. She could possibly, you know, find something much closer. But there is a strong possibility and probability that she wouldn't even be mated by any drones within your yard, which is a really cool thing. I think we're going to probably do a whole separate discussion about that. But I wanted you to kind of get a rough understanding of how mating works and how we get to the point where we say, okay, I now have a mated queen. Because it's really important and it's a big point of confusion, because people really think quite often that, you know, that their drones are a part of that. So let's talk about a couple of different ways that you can requeen a colony. So the first one we'll talk about is letting the colony requeen themselves. Now, what you would do here, and let's go back to that example that we just talked about with the split, the walkaway split, where you took the queen, walked away, and you left some queen cells behind. There's a few different approaches to this, and a lot of people will just go in and say, cool, there's like 20 queen cells, 10 queen cells, whatever it might be. They're like, all right, cool, well, we'll just see what happens. You kind of don't want to do that. What you're going to end up with then is you've got a lot of queen cells. And when you have that many of them, you have the possibility now of multiple queens emerging at the same time. They're on different frames in different areas. And it can be a bit of a, I guess I should say that you're introducing some possibility of some injury and other things going on. Ideally, you get one queen comes out, she goes, she kills the other ones before they've emerged. And that's it. She's your new queen and everything's taken care of. What I would recommend that you do is look through the frames. So let's say that with that scenario, you pull out, you know, all 10 frames in a 10 frame deep, and you have four frames that have queen cells on them and every frame has two. So you've got 8 queen cells now. I would take like the best two or three. And then if they're on the same frame, great. If they're on different frames, okay. But put those on adjacent frames facing each other and get rid of all the other queen cells, or cut those out, put them into a mating nuke with a couple of bees and try to get those, you know, those virgin queens mated and start a new colony or whatever you want to do. Certainly an option that's available to you. But when it comes to requeening that hive, you know, like I said, two or three of the biggest, best looking queen cells, that's going to be a pretty solid approach. And what you can also do too, if you want to make it easier on yourself, is you can mark the frames. So you could just put an X, or you could put an X with an arrow, or just an arrow, whatever you want to do, come up with a system that works for you, but just mark it. That way, you know, okay, this frame had a queen cell. The arrow tells you which side it was on. And that way you at least know where to check when you look a couple days later. So one thing that's really nice about this approach is it's free. So that's kind of cool, right? Now, there's always a payment, though. Like I always say, nothing in the world is free. You're going to have to pay with time, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. But it's cool because it's free. The bees can handle it. You're definitely preserving your local genetics. You're not bringing in, you know, it's good to bring in genetic diversity from other places, but you've got stock there that's already proven to be successful in your apiary, in your yard. So why don't you go ahead and just leverage that and make your own queens? Now, the big disadvantage of this approach is you've got a pretty big lead time before you're getting new and replacement brood. So yes, you may have brood that is still going to emerge from when you did this walkaway split, but that queen, let's say you have that queen cell in there and it's a capped queen cell. So maybe she emerges within a week, you know, within 5-6 days, she emerges. Takes her a few days to reach sexual maturity. She goes out, does her mating flight. So by the time she does her mating flight, comes back and begins to lay eggs, you're already about 2 weeks in. And then you've got a 3-week development cycle for a worker honeybee. You're already at 5, maybe even 6 weeks, because it was probably a week ahead of that when you made them queenless going into that that period where you did the split. So you're probably close to about 6 weeks before brood production returns and you're now replacing bees. Now think about the time of year that you're typically doing this. You're doing it on a nectar flow. You're doing it in the spring when the bees naturally want to swarm anyway and they want to expand and they want to grow. And you have nobody to replace your aging bees. You have all these foragers that are graduating up and they're going out and they're coming back with nectar and pollen, and you don't have the replacement for them yet. So it's really, really disruptive to that incredibly productive time of year. So if you're going to do this, you really got to time it well and you got to think about it, because you know, you may want to think twice. That's just, again, it's weighing it out like everything else. Being able to early on bring in a mated queen just to keep things moving. And then as your apiary grows, then you can leverage a lot of your own internal resources. You may pull a few frames out early from 5 or 6 hives, build a cell builder, build 20 queen cells. And now you have all these nukes that are working to supplement your production colonies. Right, so there's a lot of cool things you can do down the road, but early on, yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow knowing you got to wait about 6 weeks before you're getting replacement brood. Now, the other thing too is that, you know, again, anytime you're getting openly mated queens, you are still at the mercy of whatever's available, right? So are there drones available in your area? Are they of decent genetic makeup? After everything is all said and done, she's fully mated and everything's going great, and then she's coming back and a bird eats her, or she hits a spider web or something else happens, right? There's still a lot of variables involved that could prove to be incredibly disruptive to that colony. So it is an option, not the worst, but maybe not the best. So this goes into our second option of what I would say is buying a, you know, purchasing a queen cell. So this is a step in the, you know, in the right direction, I think. I mean, at least you're not starting from scratch, where you had a hive that had nothing. Now they've got to build a queen cell and go through that whole process of building the queen cell, getting it capped, because that adds another, I mean, it's a 16-day cycle. When you're looking at taking an egg and making that to a queen, that's 16 days. So when you did the walkaway, that's completely different from actually having queen cells in the hive that you just decided to split from. But purchasing a queen cell gets you a lot closer, because normally if you're going to get a queen cell, you're already probably at day 13 or 14. So you're only a couple of days away from that queen emerging, but you're still behind the eight ball. It's definitely faster than letting them do everything themselves. You know, you probably cut about 2 weeks off, but you're still going to have about a month of, you know, interruption to your productivity. But you're bringing in some new genetics, so it's still an option. Queen cells are pretty cheap, usually get them about $5 a piece. So that's not bad. You do still have some of the variables involved in mating and returning and timing with drone availability and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, still a viable option.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Now, my favorite or my preferred method that we have talked about and will talk about would be using a mated queen. Very time efficient. You usually can go online, and a lot of places, if they have them in stock, they'll, you know, second day overnight them. So you order them on Monday, you get them Wednesday, something like that. Or maybe they ship them on Tuesday, you get it Thursday. So that's a pretty good way to go, very fast. And, you know, typically those are going to show up in a queen cage with a couple of attendants. There'll be a candy plug in there, and the attendants can consume the candy, feed the queen. Everything is great. If you're going to go with that approach, it's really important to make sure that if you have a queenless colony, they're going to immediately try to make queen cells. They're going to try to replace her. So make sure that you're going in and you're removing those when you see them. If you see queen cups that have larvae in them that maybe, you know, the previous queen had laid, pinch all of those closed. Do all of that ahead of time to make sure that you don't have any contention or any issues with introducing this new mated queen. Now, there's a couple of ways that you can actually do the introduction. What I do is, let's say I've got the cage, and one end usually has a cork, and the other end will typically have a cork over a candy block. I go to the candy block side, pop that cork out, and I take a nail, and I just push it to the very top of the hole where the opening is, and I press in all the way just so that I can see a hole all the way through. I don't know if that makes a big difference or not. The first few years, I never did it at all. Everything worked out okay. But I was trying to break that candy up a little bit to get her out maybe a day earlier. So that's just something I do. So that as they're chewing away on the candy, they can look through and they can see her. And, you know, maybe it doesn't make a difference. I don't know. I like to do it. But from there, you got a couple of different ways that you can get that queen cage in place. You can just use kind of friction between two frames. And I usually put it to where the candy piece is facing down. So you have the cork up, candy down. That way, as they're eating, anything that would fall down into the hive, and then that way the queen could just walk out. Or alternatively, you can take a toothpick. A lot of times they'll come in a strap. Like if you get them in a package of bees, it'll have a little strap on. You can just run a toothpick right through the strap and kind of dangle it in between two frames. That's another way you can do it. Or another alternative, if you want to, you can actually just take it and set it in the back corner. Like if you don't have a bunch of drawn comb yet and it's a new hive, you can just drop it down in the back corner and, you know, face the candy out, let them do their thing with it. A couple days later, she'll be out and she'll be back in business. I usually recommend checking it about day three. You can do it at 2 days. You can do it at a week. You know, some people will say, oh, always wait a full week. Whatever, man. Give them 3 or 4 days. They'll be fine. But give them a full week on that first inspection. So with this, you've got a mated queen. Now, again, we've talked about it before, but again, I recognize we've got a lot of new folks here. While you do have a mated queen, she's not laying anymore. She's been in the cage for a couple of days. Her pheromone's not quite as strong, but when you have a queenless colony, they're really excited to get a queen, so it's not usually a big issue. But it is nice to give them a couple of days to kind of get accustomed to her, you know, her pheromone and her scent, and to recognize there's nobody else competing with her. She's our gal. So that's always good to go that route. Some people will do a direct release. I don't mind a direct release. It's one of those things where if you have access to queens and that you can just drive down the road, pick one up and come home, it's a little bit easier to kind of roll the dice with that on a direct release. I just don't like doing a direct release when she's not actively laying. If you had a laying queen in a nuke and you had a queenless colony, you know, 100 feet away, and you took her out of the nuke and put her in the queenless colony, I wouldn't think twice about it, because they should be very accepting of a mated queen. They shouldn't have any issues with that. But again, when she's caged up for a couple of days, you can introduce a little bit of some issues occasionally. You don't want to be, you know, one of those people who's in that 7% of where that happens and you lose your queen and then you're in a bind. But getting that queen in there as a mated queen versus the other approaches, you're restoring that brood production right away. You don't have to worry about her getting lost in a mating flight, getting eaten by something. not getting sufficiently mated because of a drone issue. It's just a cleaner and much more controlled process. So that's kind of, you know, my favorite route. Now, it's obviously more expensive. You know, everything gets more expensive as you go. You can do it for free on your own. You can buy a $5 queen cell. You can buy a virgin queen. I've seen places that actually will sell you virgin queens. There's, you know, as you go, you know, closer towards solving the problem, it costs more money. There is always a risk of rejection. Sometimes it happens. I don't have a lot of issues with it, but I can tell you, if you have a situation where you're like, oh, my colony is queenless, this is going back to those days when I thought that no eggs meant you're queenless, and I had this nice, beautiful Saskatrass queen. I was getting ready to introduce her. I set the queen cage on top of the frames, and they were walking around it. They didn't seem to be irritated at all. I opened the cage up. She stepped out, and as soon as she hit that frame, they balled her, and they fell into the inside. I couldn't get her out, and that really stunk. So if that happens, you may look around a little more and determine that you actually have a queen in there after all. But in a worst-case scenario, you know, on some of the cons of introducing a mated queen, worst-case scenario, you may have to make a second attempt. But that's really rare. Normally, if you just, you know, follow those basic instructions, put the queen cage in there, let them set her free. A couple days later, everything is fine. You're probably in the 95-96% success rate with that. That would be my guess. Fake made-up numbers. Now, another approach that you could make, if you're looking at spending $40 or $50 on a queen by herself, and you can go get a nuke for $150, maybe $175, depending on where you are. Now, obviously, the more expensive it is, the less of a good idea this would be. But if you can get a good deal on a nuke, you can almost just say, well, look, I'm just going to requeen with my nuke instead. You can get a, you know, five-frame nuke with a queen and basically merge everything together in this one new colony. So in that case, you know, what I would do is take that nuke home, and I would, you know, have the original production hive, and it's, let's say it's in a 10 frame deep. I'm going to go ahead and push, you know, probably remove everything for starters, and we're just going to go ahead and take all of the frames of brood. If you had any left over from the old colony, great, but all of the brood frames, put them in the middle and start pushing all of the, you know, nectar honey frames to the outsides and put everybody back together. I always use a little bit of smoke when doing this to keep everybody calm and chill, but I am not a proponent of this newspaper thing. And I've heard people say this like over and over again. I've seen videos done on it, and I don't understand why people tell people that you have to do this. I have merged hundreds of colonies. I have taken weaker ones, put them with strong ones with weaker. Like I have never had an issue with a colony going nuts and going crazy and attacking the other colony or the queen or whatever. That's never happened. So I'm not sure where this comes from. But now, again, you take two queen right colonies and just throw them all in together, there's going to be some confusion. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a queenless colony and a queen right colony, and you're just adding resources from one to another. I mean, think about when you're making package bees or nukes or whatever, you're grabbing resources from all kinds of different frames, putting bees together. Bees don't care. They're very simple. They want a queen. They want everything to be in good pheromonal working order. They want, you know, a dry space to work from and something to eat. You know, they're pretty simple. But aside from just getting everything merged together between the existing bees and whatever resources they had and the nuke, there's not much to it. You put them in the right order or the close to right order that you think it's going to be. The bees will move things wherever they want them to be. And within a week or two, things are pretty well back to normal. Now, what's great about this approach is you're solving the issue of the queen by requeening. You're addressing the population issue because the dwindling population in a colony that has no ability to replace aging bees, well, now you've taken care of that too because you're bringing more bees in and you have brood coming in with it. So you have more replacement workers on their way. So this is a good, reliable way of doing things. You don't have to worry about drones or finding them, you know, drone congregating areas. If you're doing it later in the season, this can be a bigger challenge for you if you are trying to get them mated and there's just no drones. So there's a lot of reasons why this can work. It is the most expensive. It is the most resource intensive because you've got to find somebody who has a late season nuke available, or quite often this could just be a colony that never really took off. And they're like, well, I got this nuke, something to kind of be mindful of, right? Are you giving me a queen that's kind of inferior and she just never developed and this is why it's still a nuke, but maybe better than having nothing. So that's a good question to ask, because you don't want to be on the receiving end of a crappy nuke. You want to make sure that it's a situation where they said, no, that we had this colony that was just bursting at the seams and they're really strong. And we went ahead and did some in-house mating and we got these new queens, you know, and they're all good to go. And this nuke is 2 weeks old, things like that. Now, we've gone through several different methods and approaches for what we do, like why we intervene, or I shouldn't say why, but we've been intervening in different ways to take different methods or approaches about how we're going to replace a queen or add a queen or add a colony. Now, let's talk about some of the natural ways of requeening, what we would call supersedure. We talked about how the queen gets mated once for life. Eventually, she runs out of eggs. Once she runs out, that's it. There's nothing else to do. And the colony will recognize this as she is starting to fail, as she's starting to not be able to lay with the same rate. Her pheromone will change. They're going to recognize, okay, guys, something's going on. It's probably time to replace mama. When it's time to do this, what they'll do is you'll usually see one or two queen cells that show up kind of mid-frame. Now, I'm going to do a little bit of a side discussion here. The location of cells is important, and it's not. A lot of people say, oh, well, there was a queen cell in the middle, so it was a supersedure. I heard somebody say the other day, yeah, I had supersedure cells and swarm cells. It's like, no, you didn't. You had a bunch of swarm cells. And when they decide that they're overcrowded and they want to make a new colony and they're going to make swarm cells, you'll see them all over the place. If you visualize what a colony would look like when it is fully structured inside of a tree, what they would visualize, we always talk about the bottom third of a frame. Oh, the bottom third of the frame is where you're going to see swarm cells. Well, think about what that looks like in a tree, right at the bottom third of that. Well, if you cut that into 6-inch high or 9-inch high or whatever it is sections, well, that might mean that you could have, in their mind, the brood chamber might be two deeps high, so the bottom third might be the top third of the bottom frame, something like that. So don't get too wrapped up around the location. Yes, they generally are in the lower third, but when it's swarm season and you see a bunch of cells, they're all swarm cells. But when it's supersedure, oh, that's one more thing too I forgot about. Supersedure is something that happens to aging or failing queens. Sometimes there's just an issue with the queen. Maybe she was inadequately mated. Maybe there is some kind of genetic problem. There is something that they're sniffing out and they're like, I don't like this. We got to replace her. But for the most part, you can get a few years of service out of your queens. So if you have a year one colony and they're superseding, that's a bit more unusual. Yes, it can absolutely happen, but it's not the norm. It's usually that one or two that you see in the middle and you're like, oh, okay, something's going on here. But when you've gotten to that point, let's say you've got this hive and you've been managing them for a few years and you're on, like, let's say year three or four and you still have this queen, like, I can guarantee you they're going to supersede her. They're going to recognize what's going on. And by this goes back to you being proactive and requeening allows you to not have to wait for this. Because remember, when they do that, they're going to let that queen cell emerge. She's going to leave, get mated, come back. And then as somebody posted in the Discord room, they had a great video that they showed of this actually happening, where the replacement queen was actively laying on the frame while they were taking out the old one. And they will do that. But in my opinion, you're far better off, because you want to maintain that productivity. So you're much, much better off to do this on your own through whatever method you want to choose. Because waiting for supersedure it introduces more challenges. And really, the hive is going to suffer. The hive and their productivity are going to suffer during that whole aging process towards the end of that queen's life. So you want to be able to control the time, you're controlling the genetics, reducing any risk around failed mating, no downtime, you know, in any kind of productivity, and maintaining a good, consistent level of performance, you know, within the colony. Now the question is, which method should you use? I would say that the things that you want to consider, the variables that are involved, you want to think about time of year, because, you know, spring is a great time of year to have a lot of drones present. It's good for open mating because of the presence of so many drones. The fall, there will be drones in the fall, not as many. And really, starting a new colony in the fall is, for the most part, there are areas where you can absolutely do that. I'm going to say, I don't know, 75-80% of them are probably not a good idea. There are some areas where the climates are much warmer, not a big deal, and you can make that happen in the fall. A lot of places, not a good idea. The other thing you want to consider is, can you handle that brood gap? Can you handle that 6 or 7 week period of time where you're waiting? Because that is a really long period of time. Now, you may have a 3 month flow. There's a lot of places they get a flow that starts in May, you know, middle of May, and they have one solid nectar flow that goes all the way until, you know, late August, early September, and then it drops off and they have 8 months of cold, something like that. So if that's the scenario that you're in, you have a little bit more time to recover. If you're in a situation like me, I've got that nice big, you know, 2 month window, and whatever happens in that time, that's kind of it for the year. We get a small fall flow, but at my house, it's not that great. Definitely better in the country, but not so great here. And another thing you may want to consider as you're trying to determine what's going to be the best approach for you is, you know, do you even have any spare resources available? Do you have a nuke or another hive you can pull from? Is there a queen breeder near you or another apiary somewhere nearby? You know, getting friends and communicating with people in the bee club is a great idea. There will be a lot of times when there's somebody at the bee club who's pinching queen cells every week for, you know, for a month, and you're like, crap, I really need a queen cell, right? That's so having some relationships with people that are in the beekeeping hobby would definitely be a good idea for you. Now, again, I go back to my favorite option. I think the best, most cost-effective, most reliable across the board is just the mated queen in a cage. That's my go-to on that one. Now, we kind of mentioned about supersedure and, you know, how often, you know, you would need to requeen yourself if you want to handle this versus letting the hive do it, which I definitely recommend. Now, there are some beekeepers out there that I've heard of that are requeening every year. And a lot of times in large operations, that's not necessarily unusual. What we do know is that the second year of a queen's life is her most productive. So anything born in 2025 or emerging in 2025, 2026 would be their most productive year. What I do and what I like and what I've kind of settled in on, let's say as an example, I have a queen that is mated and she's laying here in 2025. She has a good season. She overwinters. Okay, checkbox right there. She overwintered. That's great. 2026, she has a great season. Everything goes as planned. She overwinters 2026 into 2027, and that's when I would be requeening her. So she's going to have a two-year lifespan, and then she's going to get replaced. I don't know if that's the best plan. I don't know if that plan is going to work for you or if that approach is going to work for you, but find something that does work for you, right? Go ahead and try as your apiary grows and the number of colonies that you have expands. Try waiting 3 or 4 years on some and see what happens. See when they supersede. Do they do it at year 3, year 4? Do they do it sooner? You know, if you want to experiment, I absolutely encourage that. But 2 years works for me. I'm happy with that. So to summarize a little bit, you know, requeening is something that every beekeeper is going to have to do. A lot of them are experiencing it in their first year, unfortunately, due to, you know, one thing or another. But it's something that you need to understand. You need to understand all the dynamics at play, you know, regarding which approach you would choose to use. Understand the options. Plan ahead. Think about it right now. Like before you go out for your next inspection, take a few minutes, half hour, whatever, and say, okay, if I go do this inspection today and I crush my queen with the frame, what am I going to do? What's my plan? And if you're not sure, jump into the Discord room with us. Float the idea out there. I will probably make a note. In fact, I'm going to do that right now. But I'll do a little bit of a write-up. You know, what do you do if you kill your queen? Or what do you do if you have to replace a queen? I'll try to put together some kind of write-up in the next couple of days and we'll get that posted. But think about that ahead of time so that you're not in crunch mode when something goes, oh, crunch mode, there you go. No, but so you're not, you know, up against the clock and in a bind. You know, figure out who those local resources are. Figure out who at the bee club might be able to help you out. But yeah, every now and then you can find something on Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist or whatever for somebody who's getting rid of queens or has queens to sell. But take a few minutes to kind of come up with some contingency plans and some ideas about how you would handle it if you were all of a sudden queenless tomorrow or next week. All right, so remember, if you go to beekeepingfornewbies.com, we've got swarm trap plans, nuke plans. We've got a link to the Discord room is on there. A couple of other free things for foul brood and other documents. bestbeekeepinggear.com. We've got a few write-ups that are going in. I'm trying to add a couple every day. I think we've got about 15 there right now. We're just adding different how-tos, guides. I will get to reviews once I start buying things to review. I got a couple things here I got to get done. But that is all I've got for you on this glorious Friday. Take care, be kind to one another, and remember that I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker?
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So, we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.